Hello and welcome to Serena and Tootie. I hope you guys are doing great, because I know I am, and I know the rest of the Chainsaw Man fandom is too, because we got a new trailer early this morning, and today is Monday, September 19th, 2022, so we have not seen any full episodes of Chainsaw Man yet, but we got some more voice actors, we saw some more visuals, and we got to hear some of the opening music, which was so exciting. I went live for a little bit as well, so thank you for everyone who was able to join me while we watched live the new footage and music and got to hear a bit from the cast, though they were speaking in Japanese, so unless you understood Japanese, you didn't really know what they were saying, but it was still a lot of fun. We also learned that we're going to get at least 12 episodes this season. Nothing else has been confirmed. I know a lot of us were thinking we were going to get like 24 episodes. But you know, what's also really cool though, is that we're getting a new ending song for each episode. So 12 different songs. That is going to be awesome. I saw some big names on there too. I know people were talking about Maximum the Hormone doing some songs. They're going to do one of the endings. I think Aimir as well, or I think that's how you say their name. But I encourage you, if you like a Japanese band or singer, they're probably on the soundtrack. We also saw that Kenjiro Suda is voicing Kishibe, and I was so excited. As soon as I heard his voice, I was like, oh my gosh, wait, is that Nanami? Wait, is that Suda? And it was. That was a nice treat, and that was right at the beginning of the trailer. And apparently, one of the voice actors, I think it was the voice actress for Power, she was saying how the girls in the audience were squealing as soon as they heard his voice. It is the perfect pick as well. You know, we get the whole grizzled mentor type character. They seem like a mean guy, but actually they really care. That's what I'm talking about, you know. So and they're handsome too, you know. So that was great to see. And I know when I was watching it live with the people who joined me early this morning, we were all really excited about the voice, and that was a major highlight. The animation, of course, gorgeous. One of my favorite parts was Denji when he was getting blasted by the Bat Devil, and like you see all these like waves of impact, and his body's just kind of like getting blasted back, but he's still trying to stand up. I don't know, it was just really satisfying. So far, all the animation looks stellar, and it's not just the bombastic scenes, but the very gentle scenes too. They slow down, and you see just little bits of hair just flowing gracefully. But y'all, I'm excited for new fans of the series to come in. I know people are talking about how you gotta get your volumes now, or they're gonna be selling out the volumes of Chainsaw Man. Every time we get a new trailer or something like that, that renewed interest is brought to the franchise. So, I mean, it's great. I'm never going to try and gatekeep a really good series, because why do that? If you were up early too, I'm not sure what time zone you're in, but for us, it was around, what was it, 6 a.m.? It was definitely worth it, you know. It was so worth it to be up and to see it and feel the excitement. And I cannot wait for October. It's the perfect Halloween-style anime. It's going to be great. I don't know when we're going to get the next cluster of episodes. It'd be funny if it's always around Halloween, maybe next year Halloween or 2024 Halloween. I also read Fujimoto's one shot that I had been avoiding because I heard that it hurts. And it did hurt. It was Goodbye, Eri. And wow, it was one of his later, it was after Look Back, this short, but before Just Listen to the Music. And you know, I've got a lot of thoughts. I got a lot of thoughts and feelings about this one. Welcome, and thank you for tuning in for another episode of Serena in 2D, where we look deeply into our favorite 2D properties, whether it be anime or manga. Now today's topic is about Fujimoto as a writer, as a creator, and how he's more than just an edgelord, which is something I've seen thrown around online about him a lot. I would like to ask the people who do see him as just a two-dimensional writer, an edgelord, someone who just loves over-the-top grossness, why do you think he's this prolific? Why do you think he's this popular? Like, I wouldn't expect this much passion for something that's basically just B-horror movie, you know? And he takes a lot of inspiration from those cheaper horror movies, and I love to see that. And so this mixture of depth and superficiality that adds a lot of fun to stories that can be very heavy. And so we have this excitement through characters that are shark men and giant baby typhoons and just monsters that are fused with all sorts of crazy things. We've got a chainsaw man, a chainsaw-themed monster. You know, it's something that you'd find doodled in an elementary schooler's notebook. But what Fujimoto does so expertly is that he takes those elements, those over-the-top elements, and combines them with something that makes a lot of sense, that goes towards a broader theme that can connect to people on a deeper level. And I'm primarily talking about Fire Punch when I talk about that. A man who's half on fire and half not. He's large and muscular, and he has his trademark fire punch attack. It's cheesy, right? It's almost like some kind of Pulp Fiction situation. But of course, if you're paying attention, you see how the flames can connect to broader themes, and how even Agni's, the protagonist named Agni, Mr. Fire Punch himself, how his large form that looks so heroic and muscular is something that contradicts his heart, how he is still very immature and very childish. The flames that Agni carries with him are like rage. It's something that he cannot get rid of because it was something that was fueling him. And that's another thing. We see fuel being brought up all the time, fire as a source of fuel. But also, his fire acts as a light. It inspires other people to keep going. And so, these flames aren't entirely negative and they're not entirely positive either. They also represent how Agni is able to have hope for himself for the future. In a cold world. Again, it flames in a cold world. He's this beacon, he's this warmth, and he offers warmth to other people. And we really see this being brought up when he was freeing the captives in Beheldorg, and he was faced with his younger self and seeing that he was not going to be the type of person to let these people suffer, that he still had hope for the future, that he had to do something. And of course, he became this beacon of light, this inspiration to the people around him. So, of course, I read Goodbye Eri today, and one thing I find really interesting is that it feels like a collection of common threads that we see throughout Fujimoto's works. It is a one-shot. It's about a little bit over 100 pages, so I do recommend that you go and read it. I don't want to spoil you here, but I will be getting into spoilers. So, like I was bringing up before, how there can be bombastic or somewhat ridiculous imagery being used to explain something much deeper or to just offset some of the weight that we were feeling in a overwhelming scene. We see that here in Goodbye Eri. We see this during the hospital explosion scene with Yuta, and how he processes his trauma in a way that made the audience uncomfortable. Another common theme there too, the struggles of an artist, of what to portray, what to shy away from, and how to connect to an audience. We see characters connecting through common fears, wants, and vulnerabilities. And to me, that brings a lot of humanity to the characters that we see in his works. In Goodbye Eri, we could see this with Eri and Yuta's mother, how Eri understood what it was like to know that you were dying and to want to feel immortalized through film. We also see the struggle of an artist. And of course, in Goodbye Eri, we see that in the struggle of Yuta, in how his first movie was not received well at all. And the stresses that come with making a follow-up work, with coming up with a sequel. We also see the persistent need for catharsis, and we see this through Yuta's character, of course, how he needed to feel some sort of closure around his mother's death, how he did not film her, and he felt like he didn't keep that promise, that he tried to ignore her death and not face it. And by the end of Goodbye Eri, he does feel some sort of catharsis, and to me, the main reason that we know that he does feel catharsis is that he did not film anything towards the end. When he saw Eri, he did not film her. And when we see that final scene of the, I don't know if it was an abandoned school building or the abandoned building blowing up, that was not later shown to be a movie. That was not something that he had edited. And so he goes through all of these different cuts, trying to make the movie about Eri over and over again for years and years, obsessing over it his whole life. And then he gets to a point where he does stop. And I think one of the most obvious points that he does reach a point of catharsis beyond him not filming any of the interactions with the Eri that he met was the fact that he did not sit beside her. He didn't touch her. He didn't claim her as real. And that brings us to the other point, that we see commonly throughout Fujimoto's works, and of course in Goodbye Eri, is the necessity of fantasy. Yuta finds it easier to process reality through the camera lens, because it creates this barrier between himself and reality. And I can assume too that this was important to Eri as well. She needed her own escape from reality, and being this character in Yuta's film gave her that. And the final common thread that I see in Goodbye Eri and throughout Fujimoto's works is revisionism. In Goodbye Eri, it's the need to control one's image in front of the camera. I loved when we got to this point in the story where we're introduced to this girl who we haven't seen before, and it turns out she was friends with Yuta and Eri the whole time. But when we think we've been seeing nothing but Eri being filmed in all of her realness, we learn that a lot was being edited out and kept from in front of the camera. The fact that Eri wore glasses and a retainer. The fact that her and Yuta were never dating. And I remember getting to the panel where we see them kind of like laying together and it's so romantic. And it's like, oh my gosh, they got together. They actually got together. And the scene where we don't see them kissing, but we just see the text bubbles and we're staring up at the IV bags. And then it's revealed, no, they were never an item, but it was something that Eri wanted for her story, for Yuta's movie. Before I go on and talk about the other series that Fujimoto's done and how it relates back to those other points that I was mentioning about Goodbye Eri, I wanted to talk some more about Goodbye Eri. This was such a powerful one-shot. It's about the same length as I think some of the other ones were, like over 100 pages. Yeah, 199 pages, right before 200. I don't know if there's any meaning to that, but it feels like, again, it's about coping with loss. And I think it has one of the more melancholy endings, even compared to Look Back. I feel like this one feels almost a bit more ambiguous, and maybe it's because our poor Yuta, everything he went through and how he lost his family as well, his wife and children before all of this, and how he, you know, attempted suicide or was planning suicide. I am glad that we see him breaking that cycle of suicidal tendencies, how he, you know, was close to killing himself when he was a teenager, and then they overlap those images with him preparing to hang himself in the room where they watched movies. Fujimoto can be really clever, and so I really appreciate what he did on page 180. It's with Eri. While looking forward, she says, "This movie's on the right track, but it's not quite there." Yuta, "Huh? Sure. What?" Films that end with a love interest death are a dime a dozen. I think the latter half could use a leap. It's missing a pinch of fantasy, don't you think? Eri is talking to us, the audience, and letting us know that this story wouldn't have been good enough if it had just ended with her dying a normal, natural death. They needed some sort of fantasy, some fantastical element. And that is her confirming that she is, in fact, a vampire, and here she is. And for this fake Eri, her reason for being able to continue living is that she'll have these movies, that even though she's been reborn multiple times, this is something different. This time she can see what she calls the true her, which of course we know is not the true her. That was a carefully crafted image of the original or only Eri. And then Yuta talks to her and is like, "Will that be enough for you to cope? Is this going to be something that can use to cope with, you know, living for so long and all the tragedies of watching people die?" And of course his lines about everyone you love will die before you do, your parents, your sweethearts, friends, you'll watch them all die. Won't living like that drive you into despair? And she looks at him and lets him know that the movie is going to be enough for her. And so that's him in a way, because he fears losing more people. He can't take it anymore. And that's why he was ready to end his life. And so her finding something that kept her going, even if it was fake, even if it was a fantasy, let him know that he can use fantasy to keep going. And you know what, too? Remember when MAPPA said that they wanted to adapt all of Fujimoto's works? Think about how meta it's going to be when we see Goodbye Eri, maybe as like a short film, because I can't really see it as anything else. Even if it's like an OVA, like original video animation, that's basically a short film. So it'll be like a short film about making short films. And I would love that. I would love to see how it's brought to life through animation. Like, you know how there's all these panels where Yuta's like kind of shaky with his hand, and you know how they talk about how he framed his mother really beautifully. I would love to see that actually brought to life through film. And Fujimoto, I'm sure, would be heavily involved with that adaptation because he's heavily involved with Chainsaw Man. I think that's part of the reason why it just looks really amazing, having the creator like right there. So let's go back to Chainsaw Man for a second. With Chainsaw Man, I feel like Denji is one of the least understood MCs in anime and manga. I get so frustrated when people reduce him down to some sort of pervert or just stupid. Denji is highly empathetic, and it's to the point where he tries to convince himself that he doesn't feel anything for the people in his lives. He tries to convince himself that he'll feel nothing if/when Aki would die, Power would die. And he wondered how he would feel when Makima would die. You know, all that's foreshadowing. That's after the death of Himeno. And he wonders why he feels so empty. And it's not because he lacks empathy, because we see all the empathy that he's able to feel for other characters. It's because he tries to keep himself safe. Like, he tries to, as a survival tactic, keep himself from falling into depression, into becoming too attached to anyone, because he lived such an unstable life. That's another thing. I feel like people downplay how much trauma Denji went through as a child. Like, after he had to, you know, kill his father out of self-preservation, his father probably would have killed him. And then, of course, he was abused by the Yakuza and beaten by devils. Of course, he was, like, literally fighting battles that could have killed him since he was, like, a small child and only had Pochita by his side. And so when I talk about Fujimoto using the whole idea of everyone having similar traumas, similar fears, and even similar wants, and combining all that, having the antagonist, protagonist, everyone have similar basic needs. I mean, Chainsaw Man does a great job of that. We see it with Denji and Power early on, how he understood what it was like to lose a pet, a companion who had been with you through so much while you were lonely, while you had no one by your side. And that's why he rushes forward towards the Bat Devil. And he claims, of course, that it's just because he wanted to, you know, touch Power's chest, because she said that she would allow him to if he saved Meowee. But we see his thoughts before he, you know, starts fighting back against the Bat Devil. Like, I'm like, come on, guys. Like, you can't always trust what Denji's saying. Yeah, he's always a lot of times he downplays himself, and he does it to himself, and he does it when talking to other people as well. He's motivated by empathy a lot of times. And one of the best examples of having this sort of a connection between an antagonist and a protagonist is Denji and Makima both wanting to be held. That movie theater scene, you know, and Makima crying. I think it's really cool how Fujimoto uses movie theaters as like this necessary sort of element of fantasy that allows you to explore your own feelings. And then we go to Look Back. I loved Look Back so much. And it might not be that obvious, like how Fujino and Kyomoto were connected as characters. And I know neither one is an antagonist exactly, but remember, Fujino was really jealous of Kyomoto before she met her. And then when she realized that she had elements of herself that she was jealous of, she was jealous of how Fujino could write such funny stories and how she was really good at drawing people, while Fujino had been jealous this whole time of how Kyomoto drew these amazing, fabulously rendered backgrounds. And you know, that connects back to Chainsaw Man Part 2 with our girl, Asa, and how she had realized, you know, while she was dying after being, you know, beat up by like the Justice Devil fusion situation. I guess it's not a fiend, but you know, the class representative, class president was like using the powers of Justice, well, you know what it is. How she was realizing, oh, everyone can be jealous of other people. A lot of people are jealous of each other. Maybe if I had realized that sooner, I would have been happier. Maybe I had friends. Maybe I have a boyfriend. So again, we have that connection between a protagonist and an antagonist. And then when we go back to Fire Punch, we see how Togata and Agni were connected through that shared discomfort of how you're perceived based on your physical body. Agni feeling like he's a child in an adult man's body because he was never socialized. He never got to go to school. And so that lack of education makes him feel like a kid. And so everyone sees him, though, as this huge, muscular man in like his late 20s. And he doesn't feel like that's who he is. And then, of course, with Togata, he's a trans man, and he knew that no one would accept him as a man, especially since he could not change his body because of his regenerative properties, how everything would just grow back even if he tried to change his look. And then let's go to the next common thread, the struggles of an artist. And we can look at Togata, his thought process of how to make an interesting film, a film that would grip people. And he loved things that were out of the norm, out, just completely out there. And that's why he was so driven to Fire Punch. He was like, can you believe it? Like, this, there's this guy who's half on fire and he's completely naked. And he's walking through the white snow and he's just this one beacon of light. You know, that definitely feels like Fujimoto speaking through Togata. And of course, with Togata's character, we can connect that back to Goodbye, Eri, how Yuta, and just like Yuta, Togata used film as this way to process reality, as a way to distance himself from reality. And I'm sure that ties in a bit with his body dysmorphia and not wanting to acknowledge his own physical presence to a certain degree. Existing behind the camera, almost being like this safe space. We see it a bit in Look Back, but it doesn't feel like a big issue. We know that they do, you know, the team, Fujino and Kiyomoto, wanted to make interesting stories, but they were so talented together that that's not where any issues really came from. But with Just Listen to the Song, that was a big issue because our protagonist, he wanted to make a song that could follow up from the first one, but there were all these expectations that he could not keep up with. And he just wanted to reach a certain special person. And I think that is another thing that Fujimoto feels like. Even if you can't tell a story that a lot of people can connect to, maybe it's okay to connect to just a small amount of people. And for our next thread, that's the persistent need for catharsis. And I really feel like we see a lot of that more in Fire Punch. So Agni, of course, he wants to come to some kind of resolution about his sister's death, about Luna's death. He thinks that killing Doma will bring him some sort of catharsis, some sort of ending to his pain. But of course, it doesn't. And this might not be very obvious, and of course it's not as weighty, but in Look Back, our protagonist wanted catharsis for his own feelings. He wanted to make a song so that he could be connected to his loved one, the girl that he admired. And unfortunately for him, he didn't quite get the catharsis that he had been looking for. At least towards the end, he does get really close. She reveals that she understood what the song was about his feelings, how he remembered this moment that they had together in middle school while they were drawing each other. And so I like that they showed that they were connected through the earbuds, and so it doesn't necessarily mean that maybe he'll have a chance in the future. It does just show that she acknowledges him. She acknowledges the feelings he has for her. And maybe that's enough. The next thread, of course, is the necessity of fantasy. That's one of my favorite common threads that we see throughout Fujimoto's works, and I feel like the best part of how he feels about fantasy is that he doesn't chastise his characters for utilizing fantasy. Instead, he acknowledges it as a very human thing, as something that's necessary to keep going. When faced with horrible trauma, what do you do in order to keep going? Sometimes lying to yourself is necessary, especially if it doesn't harm anyone. We also see a lot of times that these little fantasies are seemingly kept to that person, so they're not spreading lies. And Look Back, we see fantasy being used as a method of catharsis, with Fujino imagining herself saving Kiyomoto. But of course, at the very end, we see that she does not look like she truly believes that she saved Kiyomoto's life. She knows that she didn't. But in order to keep going, which is necessary because they had a shared dream of becoming professional manga artists, she needed a bit of a fantasy. She couldn't let the death of Kiyomoto stop her from meeting her deadlines, from pursuing her dreams as being a manga artist. Because remember, she broke down in her room and was like, what was the point of doing any of this? And in Fire Punch, I feel like that idea of fantasy is tied in with religion and having something to believe in, even if it's something that's man-made. We see the followers of Agni not necessarily being portrayed as all bad, but as people who needed something to believe in and to keep going. And for poor Agni, he needed distractions from his constant pain. And then we see him asking Togata, what happens when you die? And he tells him, I don't know, you know, I've been around for a long time, but I don't know what happens when you die. And Agni's like, just tell me something. It doesn't matter. It can be a lie. Just tell me something. And that's where we see Togata bring up movie theaters and explaining how great movie theaters are and how you just go to a movie theater and you sit next to your loved ones right after you die. Oh my god, I love the sequence where we saw him dying and while he was, you know, falling under the frozen lake, and we're transported to an empty movie theater, and it was drawn so well. It's like I could feel it. And you see, like, if you look at the top, you can see like a bootleg Avengers sign. And so that was funny. But it was surreal, it was beautiful, and I love how it ties into that idea again of fantasy being a necessity and movies being a form of fantasy. Fiction is this thing that allows people to keep going. How it's important to stop and put yourself in fictional situations sometimes, in believing in things that didn't quite happen, to bending reality, just so you can keep going. And that doing that doesn't make you a bad person, because the world can be a really harsh place to live in. And this final thread is something that I feel like I've never heard anyone bring up when it came to Chainsaw Man in particular, revisionism. And that relates back to the necessity of fantasy, but I feel like this is a bit more negative leaning. So when I'm talking about revisionism, of course we have it in Goodbye, Erie, with the various characters trying to control their image in front of the camera, Erie and Yuta's mother. But in Chainsaw Man, we have Makima, who wants to use Chainsaw Man to erase certain concepts. And remember, when a concept is erased, that erases all memory of that thing. So you have changed history. Makima wanted to get rid of everything she deemed unpleasant, but Denji understood the necessity of unpleasantries. And because there is such a heavy focus on World War II, on Nazis, the fact that that's like what Makima says right before getting into the whole idea of erasing concepts. She asks Kishibe, do you remember the Nazis? Like that took me out. When I got to that panel, I was like, what? Like, what does that have to do with anything? And how could Kishibe not remember the Nazis or their role in history? Fujimoto seems to have this stance that you should not try to revise history. You shouldn't try to get rid of unpleasant moments in history. And this could be me digging in a little bit too deeply, but honestly, I don't think it's that much of a stretch, okay? Fujimoto is, of course, a Japanese man. And unfortunately, like in many countries, Japanese citizens were not taught about the horrors that their country perpetrated during World War II and beyond. I've done some reading on this subject and read some interviews, and I've seen people say that they don't want it brought up or taught in schools because it's so unpleasant, because it's so bad and that happened a long time ago, so why bring it up? And of course, Fujimoto's stance is that this is necessary, that this is not where we need to revise things, this isn't where we need fantasy, this is where we need people to remember. Removing negative things does not create a complete or truthful picture. And in Chainsaw Man, the idea of revising such large concepts, such important, horrible, negative things, is too much. Education is another common thread throughout a lot of Fujimoto's works. Even in Look Back, remember, Kiyomoto wanted to go to college in order to become a better artist. She was willing to put her career on the line so that she could hone her craft. And of course, if we look at Fire Punch, Doma talks about the importance of education and how Agni constantly sacrificing himself for the various villagers was not going to teach them how to truly survive without him, and that they needed to be able to provide for themselves, and that what they lacked wasn't food, but was knowledge. And the need for education is all over Chainsaw Man. I remember Chainsaw Man is the first work that I read from Fujimoto, so it was really surprising when I saw education being brought up over and over again, but now I know that's like a common thread. We remember Denji was talking to Reize, and how she brings up how he should be in school. And of course, in part two, we see that paying off, him actually going to school. We see Quan Chi wanting to make sure that all of her girlfriends went to school to get educated. and just a couple of other things too. Kobani, how her dream was to go to college and how she had to keep working and sending money home so that her little brother could go to college. And so she never had any money to provide for her own education. Went off on a bit of a tangent there, but anyway, let's get back to talking about revisionism in Chainsaw Man. I feel like that's a big part of what Makima represents. And of course, she still feels very human, even though she's inhuman, through her wants to be held, to be loved, to have equals. But her biggest flaw was that she wanted to change history, to get rid of things she thought were unpleasant. One of the things that Fujimoto excels at is making his audience uncomfortable. And it's not just the gross-out scenes, it's not just the odd relationships, it's also the fact that he brings up things that we don't like to face, like the need to create beliefs that might be rooted in fears. The fact that sometimes reality can become unbearable, and that not everyone is going to cope in the same way. In Goodbye Eri, Yuta is judged so harshly by his classmates, partially because he brought up something that was so uncomfortable, the death of his own mother. And they found him running away from the hospital and doing the whole explosion scene as distasteful. But they didn't understand him, and they didn't understand that this was his way of coping and that that's valid. Who's to tell someone that their harmless way of coping with their own mother's death is distasteful? One of the reasons why Eri liked Yuta's movie so much is that she could see what a good person Yuta was behind the camera. So that connection she had through Yuta was what allowed her to not see that ending as distasteful. In Look Back, we have the various manga strips being the thing that connects Fujino and Kiyomoto, both of them feeling a connection to each other before they even met each other. I love that Fujimoto shows us again and again how important fantasy and fiction is. How it helps us connect with other people, how it helps us process our own traumas. And so I find it so interesting how we have these two different concepts of revisionism and fantasy being put side by side. Revisionism doesn't give you the whole picture. So creating a curated image of yourself so that you can be remembered in a certain way after your death is one thing, it's fairly harmless. But when we get to Chainsaw Man, we see these massive concepts that Makima wants to erase. Hunger. She was pro the erasure of Nazis in World War II. She wants to get rid of things that are just too big. But of course, Denji understands that it's these hardships, these negatives that are necessary. And while we don't get into that too much in Chainsaw Man, because it's mostly brought up towards the end, I think we see how these struggles make good things pay off a lot more. And remember, again, Fujimoto understands the importance of education. And so someone who values education knows how important it is to remember the atrocities of war and all sorts of other unpleasant events in history in order to keep them from happening again. And like we see in Goodbye Eri, in order to truly move forward, you need hope. And in order to have hope, you have to know the truth, even if it takes a little bit of fantasy in order to make those unpleasantries a bit easier to swallow. Thank you for tuning in for another episode, and I hope I'll catch you in the next one. What an amazing time to be a fan of Fujimoto's works. We have Studio MAPPA, who's been churning out polished, beautiful, well-adapted works since conception, wanting to adapt every single thing that Fujimoto has created. Chainsaw Man seems as though it's going to set a new bar for TV animation. And Fujimoto keeps cranking out new chapters of Chainsaw Man, and we don't know when that's going to end. Part 2 has been great so far, and I can't wait to read future chapters. If you enjoyed this episode, I would appreciate it so much if you gave it a rating. And of course, remember, you can follow me on SerenaIn2D on TikTok, where I cover the latest chapters of Chainsaw Man and talk about all sorts of other shows and manga, and especially Jujutsu Kaisen. But thank you for listening to Serenin 2D, and I will catch you in the next episode.